This is Pearls and Swine on Good News You Can Use. I'm Levi.
And I'm Lisa. And today we're starting something that actually I have been looking forward to for a little while. And that is a walk through the book of Ruth this summer. Very excited about that.
Yeah. If you haven't spent serious time in lately, I want to make the case right now that it might be the most quietly powerful books in the entire Bible.
Yeah, quiet is the right word because it's not like there's no sea partings or fire being called down from heaven.
I like
heaven.
Those parts of the Bible, though. Like when fire's coming
sure,
down.
Yeah, the but zapping and whatnot. Yeah. Yeah. It's just this story of a really small and broken family. But God is doing something extraordinary in ways that none of them could see while it was happening, for sure.
Yeah, we're doing this series at church, and we're calling it Sunburn. And before you ask, yes, that's a real title. Lisa, do you want to set it up and explain it?
Right. So you take your kids to the beach. It's the middle of summer. And I'm actually thinking in Arizona, you don't even have to go to the beach. You just have to like be outside for 12 minutes,
yeah.
You know? Right. It's the middle of summer or March. And they play all day and nobody complains. Nobody says anything. They're having so much fun. And the sun all the while isn't like, hey, I'm burning you up, right? It's not announcing what it's doing. But then the next morning, or maybe even later that night, you look at them.
And you go, I'm a horrible parent.
Right. Total sunburn. Their little cheeks are red. But the thing was, the burn was, as you know, happening the whole time. The sun was working on them all day in ways that they couldn't feel until it was too late to do anything but deal with it, like aloe vera or whatever it is that you put on your sunburn.
Yeah, and that's the picture of this book. A lot of us are in seasons where something is working on us. Maybe it's loss or grief or disappointment, the slow erosion of something we thought would last. And we are so busy just moving through it, we haven't even stopped long enough to reckon with what it's actually done to us.
Yeah, and Ruth is for that moment, the next morning moment, when you finally stop and you feel it. But here's what we don't want you to miss. This is also, as we said, one of the most quietly hopeful books in the entire Bible. Not because it pretends that the losses aren't real, but actually the opposite. It looks at those losses directly, names them without flinching, and then shows us a God who's at work in the wreckage in ways no one inside the story could see while it was happening. So, let's go to the text. Ruth opens with one of the most loaded first lines in all of Scripture. It says this, in the days when the judges ruled, there was famine in the land.
Yeah, this is not just like a neutral time. It is a bad time in Israel's history. You have all these judges like Samson and Jehoshaphat and all of these other guys.
And some weird stories, too.
You know, just weird stories. And if you read that and you've read Judges, the alarm bells are going ding, 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 ding right now. There's something going on here.
Well, yeah, because Judges is basically a record of Israel's repeated catastrophic moral collapse. The author delivers his verdict on the whole period twice, and it's devastating. Says this, in those days, there was no king in Israel. Everybody did what was right in his own eyes.
That is the world Ruth is placed in. Not beside it, not after it, just like right in the middle of chaos, like all around her. And there's chaos also in her family. And the question of the book exists, can God be doing anything great in the worst of times?
Yeah, it reminds me of the opening line from A Tale of Two Cities, right? It's the best of times. It's the worst of times. But yeah, and it takes place in the time of Judges, but also in Bethlehem, which means house of bread. And that house of bread has no bread, right? We're in
famine.
The land of it's the time of famine. So the very place whose name is the promise happens to be the place of desperation. And so Elimelech takes his family east into Moab, which is Gentile territory with a complicated history, is the edges of everything he knew about who he was and who God was. And before we rush to judgment, desperate people do desperate things. And Elimelech is not a villain. He's a father watching his children go hungry, doing what any father would do.
Yeah, one of the favorite things about the book is the names. In Hebrew narrative, names are almost never just names. they're like little theological commentaries. And the book front loads the commentary right in the first five verses.
Okay, tell us about it.
First one is Ahimelech. He's the father, he's the dad, and his name means, "My God is King." And the man drops dead in chapter one, off screen, without a word from heaven.
So immediately you start this book, and you're thinking, "My God is King." And he just let the man whose name says so die in a foreign country without explanation?
Exactly. That's the tension. It's just built right in the name, right in the beginning. And the whole book is written to resolve it, to show you that, yes, God is still king, even over the deaths of men named after his kingship.
Yeah, then we got Naomi, and her name means pleasant or sweet. But by the end of chapter one, she's asking people to call her Mara, which means bitter, the opposite of her name. And so that journey from Naomi to Mara is the emotional map of the entire first chapter. And the journey from Mara back to something resembling sweetness is the territory of the whole book.
Yeah, and there's like these two sons, Mahalon and Chilion, which means, their names roughly mean sickness. And wasting.
Hopeful.
Their names literally tell you what happens to them before you even get to the story. The author has written the ending into the beginning, which is a really crazy way to write. But his way of signaling that nothing in the story is happening by accident. This is under sovereign control from the very first word that was inked.
And then we've got Ruth, whose name likely means friend or companion, which is exactly what she's going to be, not just to Naomi, but in a sense to all of us who read the story for the rest of time.
Here's where I want to land before we close today. The very first verse puts us inside the worst season Israel has ever had, and God's response to that season is not a prophet. It's not like a vision. It's not like some dramatic scene where he's, you know, speaking into a burning bush. It's a small, broken, ordinary family in Moab that nobody is watching.
Well, yeah, and yet, we'll get into this as we go. God is threading the needle of history through that family. Ruth chapter 4 tells us that the child born at the end of this story is the grandfather of David, the greatest king Israel had ever had. The ancestor of Jesus, born in Bethlehem.
During the worst of times, God was building something. He's building a lineage of the King of Kings. Through a famine, through exile, through three gravestones, through a widowed Gentile woman on a dusty road.
Yeah, that's the God of this book, and according to this book, he's not changed.
So as you walk away today, here's what we want you to carry. Carry into your day, God does some of his most significant work inside the worst of times. The book of Ruth is set during the period of Judges, Israel's darkest season, and he is precisely here, hidden inside the chaos, that God is building something no one can see yet. Whatever season you're in today, whether you would describe it as a season like the Judges season or not, the God of Ruth is not waiting for better conditions to begin working. He's already working. The question is not whether he is present in your circumstances. The question is whether you will trust that he is.
Thanks for tuning in with us. If you've got questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. You can email those to office@evangelup.org. If you'd like to catch up on any of the previous Pearls and Swine episodes, just search Evangel Houghton on your preferred podcast platform or go to our website, evangelup.org.